Hey everyone, and welcome to Not a Big Deal, the podcast aimed to help first-time marketing leaders. I want to officially welcome you to what we've named season two of our podcast. Kelly and I realized that while we want this to be a space where we can openly talk about things and learnings that we've had and be very vulnerable about what we found difficult when we were first-time marketing leaders, we really felt like actually we want to bring you value and help you answer questions that you might have while you're listening to this podcast. So I'm going to pass it over to Kelly now, who's going to introduce our first ever guest on Not a Big Deal.
I think we need to add in like a drum roll animation here because woo, our first guest. I am super excited to invite one of my closest friends, Kunal Patel, who's the CRO of Slate, to have a great chat with us about how sales and marketing can work together. Kunal and I go way back, worked at a startup together back in 2014, then Salesforce, then both moved from San Francisco to London as well at the same time. Also, his wife is one of my best friends as well. So safe to say, I know Kunal pretty well, but it's fun to bring it back to the professional side, although hopefully we're not going to be too professional today. But Kunal, thank you for joining us. Could you just tell us a bit about your background and how you came to be a CRO?
Yeah, thanks. This is awesome. So excited to be here and thanks for having me. My journey started, and I won't go too deep here, but I started in electrical engineering in college and realized I wasn't very good at it, and I didn't really like it. And so quickly after I graduated, I figured out that I wanted to get into consulting because I could at least see a bunch of different companies. So I got into consulting, spent about 5 years there, and got exposed to enterprise software. So back then, it was things like Oracle and SAP and how do you implement large-scale systems. So after 5 years of doing that, I started down a path of looking at early stage startups and just seeing what I could do, how I could be helpful. And so fast forward 10 years later after that, and it's been working at companies like Coupa, working at RelateIQ with Kelly, landing at Salesforce, and then helping and advising anywhere from like 10 to 20 different startups along the way, either in a full-time capacity or as an advisor. And I think I've held most go-to-market roles across that time. And so the evolution for me was being able to at least understand every different part of it, and now being able to help lead teams that are scaling from, you know, founder-led sales all the way through to like scaled go-to-market operations. So now I'm at a company called Slate, leading go-to-market there, and we help content creators and social media folks create amazing content. And it's been awesome because it's at the intersection of some of my favorite types of customers. We work with sports teams, work with amazing brands, and a lot of the content that you see on Instagram, TikTok, and all these places, a lot of it's been created in Slate. So excited to be able to share a lot of that with my team and a lot of our customers as well.
Can I ask a follow-up question to that?
Yeah.
When you're saying you've worked on most things of go-to-market, can I ask specifically, like, then what roles have you been in that have been, yeah, can you tell me a bit more?
Yeah, I've been...
I know, he's already really
good. No, it's great. I've been a quota-carrying sales rep. I've been a BDR. I've been a customer success person. I've been a sales engineer. That's where I first started in the startup world. Been a sales manager. I think I've done like enablement before as well. So yeah, it's been kind of a wide range of different things.
And then your new role now is CRO, which is the first time you've had that role?
Yeah. So I think I've done this role in some capacities. This is the first time they've officially given me a title of CRO, which honestly, it's just doing the same thing. It's helping out all the teams that roll up underneath me.
So what I've seen with the CRO role is something I started to hear about maybe 2 years ago. And I've really seen that within startups or scale-ups particularly, it's a role that they're adopting more and more. Whereas this kind of like, if you haven't heard about it, is this kind of merge between, like you're saying, go to market. But a lot of the time it's meaning that for marketing, the shift has been head of marketing instead of maybe reporting to a CMO or a CEO is now reporting to the CRO. I actually have a quote here, which I thought was really interesting about how to define that role. So CROs and RevOps leaders face the near impossible task of simultaneously building cross-functional teams, funding growth capabilities, and prioritizing hundreds of smart growth actions, all while generating measurable results. And I was going to ask you, does that sound accurate in your new role?
That sounds like such an easy job. yes, I would say those are, yeah, all those things are parts of the role. And I think the evolution of this role is because if you think about startups over the past decade, a lot of them, you know, it was easy to get funding. It was easier to get a path forward. And revenue was what felt like it used to be a nice to have, and you'd eventually figure it out. It's a requirement now. Like you can't continue to exist as an early stage business and not focus on revenue. And so I think the CRO role is encompassing of that, where now you have, you know, marketing, you have success, you have all these different people that are kind of rolling up under this function, because at the end of the day, companies need to make money. And if they're not doing that, it's hard to sustain. And so I think that's part of the evolution, is that that's become such a focal point for early stage startups than ever before. That this role has now been, you know, all the things that you listed out and now needs to own.
Yeah, it's no longer growth at any cost. It's profitability.
Yeah, way better said.
And I think it's interesting because we're seeing now a shift. Maybe it's always been like this, but Lucy and I have talked about this a bit, that marketing is no longer just responsible, or should not just be responsible, for purely driving leads. It's also helping close business. Like marketing can affect and impact the entire sales cycle, and even all the way through customer advisory and back. It's much more of a sort of infinity loop than a funnel. But sometimes the expectations from sales teams may still be that it is just leads. Is this something that you've seen, or with the move sort of to the creation of a CRO role and marketing coming under it, are you seeing this shift happen sort of, I guess, on how marketing is approaching go-to-market as well?
Yeah, it is definitely a, like, you're looking for a thought leader in that role and a partner. Like, it's not someone who's just directly reporting to you and you're trying to give them, you know, hey, go do these things, or like, help me drive more leads. Like, I want a sparring partner to be like, hey, we need to actually do messaging better, because if we do messaging better, it's going to flow into actually deals being done faster, right? And so I think that's the biggest thing, is when I look at, like, you know, marketing folks and how we think about bringing people on, it's, I want someone who's going to challenge us to do better and not just think about it as like a simple, hey, I need to drive more leads or drive more impact in terms of just revenue from a top line perspective. But it's really like, look at the entire revenue function, and marketing can touch so many different parts of it, from customers to lead gen to, you know, closing deals. And I think that's the thing that's most important to me, is like, I want someone on my team who can do that, not just be told like, hey, go get me more leads.
Yeah, totally. I have a follow-up question to that. I think you're, I'm going to stroke your ego, quite a great CRO, I would imagine. What if there's a marketer that's brought under a CRO that does only view marketing in a pipe gen, like top of funnel lead gen way? How would you advise a marketing leader to like either shift that CRO's perspective or align to what matters to them? Is it like some suggestions I could think of is like, don't just give yourself a lead goal as a marketer, also give yourself a pipeline goal as well as like a revenue close goal, because that's what your CRO will care about. Are there other things that you would suggest a marketer do to align to their CRO?
I think those are great, right? Like, it's not just, hey, how many MQLs can you get in the door? It's, you know, since I joined, or since we've implemented these tactics or whatever it might be, like, let's focus on closing that gap between what an MQL to, you know, sales qualified lead is, or an opportunity looks like. And then it's, you know, hey, we've done a bunch of work on our messaging, we've updated our sales collateral, we've done all these things, like, let's measure how that's actually resulted in deals closing faster. Let's look at close rates and things like that. And so I fully agree with that, where it's, from the marketing function, no matter what you're, what I call like a major, if your major's in demand gen or, you know, whatever it might be, like, it's understanding what are the other things that are going to impact the entire revenue function, and having metrics and capabilities and things that will bubble up that'll be relevant to, you know, someone who's trying to, you know, run the business and close more money.
Makes a ton of sense.
I'm curious, from your point of view though, like, what's the opposite of that? Like, when you have a CRO that only cares about leads and demand gen, how do you think about just mind share of that person and changing their opinion on that?
That's a good question. I think it is giving yourself a quota. that is pipeline and revenue. And I think also sometimes it is just meeting them where they are to start. So do just focus on leads and figure out how to make that a repeatable sort of go-to-market engine. And once you've proven that, sometimes it's just being proactive, like sitting in on gong calls and being like, interesting, I hear this come up a lot, but the customer tends to respond like this. What if we tried pitching it like this? Or, you know, something we've done at Meter is like integrations come up on every single call. Let's create a kick-ass slide. Maybe that's going to be the only slide the sales team actually ever needs to show on a call. Here, what do you think? And so I think it's like I said, meeting them where they are and then slowly proactively offering ideas of where else you can impact, because they might not see it until you show them. What do you think?
I was also going to say, I think it's also understanding how somebody communicates, right? If you've got a CRO who's super data-driven, you have to have a pretty good, like, robust knowledge of what's happening, where you can kind of like get it out of your back pocket to back up stuff you're doing or decisions you're making. Or if you've got someone who's like slightly more emotional, maybe you've got like customer testimonials where you can refer to things. But I was also going to ask, I think for me within this role, it kind of shows, I think, the shift that Kelly and I felt in our career of like this slightly more fluffy, less account. Like, I always put it down to like where I was in the team, but actually while we're talking, I'm thinking, no, it's also a big shift for marketing where the accountability like has started to have much more pressure. And I guess sometimes with that though is this kind of balance of patience. And I was wondering actually as a CRO how you do that, because you're having to kind of like get patience for your team while you're trying to set that up. And I think actually a lot of the time with marketing, which Kelly and I have found, is there's a lot of trial and error. There's a lot of trying to work out even logically, like, right, we've tested this, but this isn't working and this isn't working. And I guess from your point of view, actually, how do you help to have that space for your team?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think it's like you both have great points on how to shift the balance of that for a CRO to not just focus on the numbers, right? But I think like in any early stage company, experimentation is a reason why things can get better. And I think if you set the tone as, you know, a leader in your function as like, we're going to experiment and not all things are going to work and that's okay, but we're going to learn and we're going to figure things out and we're going to get better, right? Like, I think that's the main thing. And I would not just say that's a marketing thing. Like, I want salespeople to do that. I want our success team to do that. I want everyone across the team to feel comfortable to fail. Because it means that they're trying hard enough and they're trying something different that not a lot of other people will do. And so I think it's more of a culture thing than a tactical, like, hey, a CRO needs to do X or a marketing person needs to do Y. I think it's just like setting the right culture and tone for the entire organization.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to ask then, okay, so the functions Kelly and I have worked with previously, we've kind of found that under a CRO role is where we've seen a lot of collaboration has been, or expected collaboration has been, with sales and marketing. So I was kind of wondering how you have seen that like work together well, where you see the kind of like places where marketing and sales can really help to get better or succeed.
Yeah. I mean, I think Kelly, you hit on it so well, which is sitting in gong calls or just sitting with the sales team, right? Or even, no matter who it is, like sales, even success team. I think it goes beyond just the, hey, person Y needs something, so let me go produce a piece of sales collateral or content, right? Like when you're sitting in a conversation, you're hearing it from a prospect's point of view, you're able to also think about like, hey, how do we answer questions when objections come up, right? And like the salesperson's going to get this every day, and just having another person have a point of view on it or how we think about positioning it, I think it's just like that's the stuff that's valuable. And I know like sales enablement can fall under so many different hats of people's responsibilities, but I feel like when like inherently marketing just does it, because they're going to be the ones, like the good ones are going to be sitting in those calls, they're going to be talking to sales reps, they're going to be doing the things of collecting all that information to then eventually figure out like, hey, this needs to be turned into a one pager or a kill sheet, whatever it might be. But early on, it's like you're sitting in conversations with folks, you're learning what works and what doesn't work, and that's just another function that marketing can play to enable the rest of the organization. I don't know if you've thought about that. Like, I know Kelly, like you've seen it from your perspective, but Lucy, from your perspective, like, have you thought about, you know, what impact outside of like collateral and things are the biggest drivers for helping the team out?
Yeah, so when I worked closely with sales, we were targeting chefs who were just like, if I tried to send them a one pager, they were not looking at it. And so what I tried to do the most was I'd sit on calls with sales, but I'd also kind of check all our comms with sales. I really saw them as the kind of, a lot of the way the representatives of the customers that we had, like they're the ones going into the back door of a kitchen to try and work out like how to convince them. And so I was just constantly trying to translate, right, how are you talking to them? Now show me, like, how can I do that? Is that the right tone? Is that the right messaging that we're saying? Can they understand what we're trying to get across? And that was, I guess, how I always collaborated with them. So I never really like produced a lot of sales assets. And I guess that's where I'm always a bit stuck on when we say, how does sales and marketing collaborate? I'm always like, well, I just talked to them. Like, was that enough or should I have been doing more?
It seems so simple, right? That is enough.
Okay, good. Okay, great. It makes me feel so much better. Thank you.
I even think this is, again, to go back to Gong, and this is, we are not sponsored by Gong, but yeah. Something else that I've, like you said, can all learn from the sales team is, like, they're the ones on the front line. They know the ones that are the, like, what are the biggest customer pains, actually? And so you can even, I mean, I think every marketer should be talking to customers, and Lucy's been a big advocate of doing, like, voice of the customer interviews and work. But like, for example, to bring in a real example for Meter, is we were working on our next level of messaging. It was me and the CEO. We had this great idea. Like, Meter was a pricing operations platform because you start here, but actually you need to get here, and really the ones that can get you here. And I went in to listen to a bunch of Gong discovery calls, and I was like, no one gives a shit about pricing operations. Every single discovery call is just about billing pain. They just have one specific pain. Let's start there. And so I think that's a good way to, like, maybe it's not a direct marketing and sales working together, but it's marketing using sales to, like, stay grounded in real customer pains, make sure your messaging is aligned to what is actually happening on calls. Because I think it's easy to get ahead of your skis, especially when you are a startup, you're experimenting, you're trying to figure out, you know, who your ideal customer is, what's the right message to hit them with. It's a good sort of passive way to stay connected. Yeah. And then I think from a marketing perspective, it's just communicating that to your team. Not like so you get credit, but like actually kind of so you get credit. like you want them to know, I'm listening, I'm being proactive, like, great call with X customer. I found that really helpful. Just a little tactical thing.
And I think that's awesome, right? Which is like, use like marketing and messaging as a way to experiment. Have sales folks who are on the front lines test. And then, you know, use data and the things you get out of it to iterate. And it's like, the faster that cycle goes, I feel like the faster you get to like a point where it's like, hey, here's exactly what we're going to go with. And we know this works.
Yeah. Find a marketing friendly salesperson and befriend them.
You can just exactly.
Who do you see as like, who's most willing to help and sort of has that marketing mentality? And I think that helps.
Totally.
So we also know that there can be points of friction between sales and marketing. It's a tale as old as time, as everyone says, is, you know, sales be marketing. And that's why I do love the CRO role, because I think it makes both teams just, we are the revenue team. Let's work together. But what are some common points of friction that you see? Like, I think communication can be a challenge sometimes, especially in a fast-paced environment. What are some things you see not go well, or areas for opportunity?
I mean, first off, I think the friction is good, right? I think if you don't have friction, there's not enough people who are pushing the boundaries of what needs to be done. And so I see friction as like, I like to call out the friction, because I think it's like, hey, we're all working hard, we're all trying hard, we're not just allowing the status quo to be what it is. And so I want to embrace the friction. I think the points that typically happen are, you know, you're always going to get salespeople who are like, oh, I wish I had this one pager, or I wish I had this one thing, right? It would help me close this deal. And like, that's always going to be the case, but it's never just going to be that one thing. And I think there's a balance here of getting scrappy, especially early on, where it's like I've had salespeople put together some of the best collateral index because they're just like, hey, I've got this pain. I'm not going to go bother my marketing person for the 10th time for something. Like, I'm going to create it. And then if that goes well, I'm going to hand it over to them, and then they're going to make it way better, right? And so I think the friction is always going to be in just like, there's never going to be enough resources. There's never going to be enough time. And that's going to create a harder just trade-off. And like, what do you prioritize? not everyone is going to get what they want, and marketers are going to get so annoyed by like the CRO and salespeople because it's going to be like, oh, we really need a case study on this, or we really need that. And it's like, it just, it's always going to be that trade-off. So I think the one thing I like to figure out pretty quickly is like, one, acknowledging that there is going to be friction and that's okay. Two, recognizing that like everything will go into some type of bucket of priorities, and there's going to be the stuff that's like absolutely on fire that we're going to collectively prioritize. And that means like, you know, marketing, sales, CRO, whoever. And then there's going to be things that we're okay to just like put on the side for now. And it's going to create some annoyances for whoever it might be. And marketing may get the other side of this where it's like, hey, I didn't really want to prioritize this right now, but it looks like I have to. But ultimately it's like, if we all come from the point of trying to get better, I think these trade-offs and these priorities will naturally figure themselves out, and no one will take it hard because like friction can turn into conflict. Conflict can turn into like, you know, a messy org. So I think the biggest thing is just being able to like sift through that and manage the different aspects of it. I don't know. You've probably felt like the CRO coming in and saying like, hey, we need this right away. Or like salesperson coming in and being like, hey, we need this right away. Like, what have you done in those circumstances?
Should I answer first? Made a deck that was probably completely useless, because then also you're like reactive, right? So you're going like, okay, they need this deck because they've got this big thing and you don't want to let the team down. Like, you know, the CEO is invested in like this pitch that they're doing. You want to do well for the sales team. And like, but I actually found that when I came away from it is actually giving what would have been better in that scenario was training salespeople on what I can do as a marketer. So like, instead of it being that it's all on me to produce these one pages or a case study or a deck that would like look good, actually a lot of the time it was kind of this thing that sales sometimes found like, oh, we're feeling a bit nervous about this pitch, like let me give it to you and like you'll make it better than I can. And actually what I found was they were more than capable to do it. It just meant that they needed training or resources that they could use, that also we'd have like maybe some docs around the language that we'd prefer to use, or we'd set up a Canva template, which was really easy for them to use. So instead of it then being that you're kind of like, as marketing, on the back foot, because basically you're kind of a lot of the time on the back foot for different places in the company, you kind of then want to try and get in front of it to be able to like help them, but not like be serving them, if that makes sense.
Completely. Teach them how to fish, right? It's like, how can you help them?
Yeah, exactly. But I didn't, Kelly, for you, what do you think?
No, I completely agree with you both. I love what you said, Kunal, that actually a healthy bit of tension and friction is good. I like that. And I think, Lucy, your example shows how you can build trust with them. Like, I think that's a big thing is, yeah, how are you not subservient, but still are helpful if things aren't going well? Like, to bring another real example, we've been doing a lot more prospect dinners, and it's always hard to drive registrants to prospect dinners. Who owns the list? How does it impact the content you're building? And something we've been experimenting with is actually using sales target account lists in Salesforce to build the list for them and say, here's our suggestion. What do you think? Let's work through it together. Who do you take off? Who do you have the best relationship with? Who do you need help with? And it's a very subtle thing, but instead of like just nagging a sales team to populate a campaign in Salesforce, and this is a woman on my team, so she gets full credit. But you know, taking a bit of initiative, I think just shows like, I deeply understand your pipeline. I'm here to help. Let's figure out how to progress it. And so I think sometimes it's just little things that are trust building moments. It doesn't have to be anything big or dramatic.
Yeah. I like the idea of just asking like, how do you think we should do this? Right. Cause I think you get so many more creative and interesting ways to get things done than just being like, hey, I'm the person who's responsible for this. This is how it needs to be done.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
Another question. I know this might be a little off piece from pure sales, but something we've talked about previously, Kunal, is customer success, which sometimes is still a seller. Whether they're responsible for upsells or, you know, keeping customers happy. How do you see marketing and customer success working together?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite combinations right now. I actually have someone on my team who's owning customer marketing, and they are the head of our CS team. And it's awesome because she gets like the full perspective of what's important to our customers. And then she and her team produce a ton of great customer marketing content that I look at and I'm like, oh my gosh, this should be in front of prospects. And so when I think about that, like, you know, success and marketing going hand in hand, I think of like, well, right now we're a small team, so we don't have marketing owning customer marketing, and it's just fallen into our CS team. And I think there's just so many great nuggets out of that. And eventually when it goes back to marketing, it's, to me, the perspective is like, how do we turn a lot of the great content that we're able to produce for our customers into more generalized content for prospects that is interesting, compelling, and, you know, continues to have us be thought leaders in kind of this whole social media space. And so I love that our success team owns it, because they are at the core of what matters to our customers. And I want that to continue to be some element of this, no matter when it eventually goes into marketing.
Something that I'm picking up from what you're saying, which I really think is interesting, is that it seems like you've created a culture where obviously everyone has their primary role, but they're not like set territorial like swim lanes, if that makes sense. Like, you're like, if my salespeople go to make a deck that then works and they pass it back to marketing, like, that's a win. If customer success is the one building stories, they pass it to marketing to do something else with, that's a win. And I think it's cool because it just gets everyone super involved. Everyone is aligned to the same goal, and you actually probably end up getting a lot better quality and speed of things if you're not too worried about who owns what or over-engineering process.
Yeah. It's interesting. I didn't think about it from that perspective, but yes, definitely. It's like building a culture of anyone can pick up anything. We all are capable. The trade-off I'm always trying to balance is like, how much is this taking away from the core job that we're all supposed to be doing? And like, if a sales rep of ours is spending, you know, no time prospecting because they're building collateral for the sales team, like, there's something that's gone wrong here, right? And so that's an extreme case. But I do think, like, at early stages, especially in the size of company we are, that's the fun part of being in a startup, is you get to wear a bunch of different hats, you get to do a bunch of different things, and you get to see that impact like pretty quickly. I think there's a balance as we continue to grow of like creating those swim lanes and making sure people are still, you know, focused on their own primary task. But I don't ever want that to be the case where like you join a company and you're doing your only job that you were brought in to do, because I think that's like a disservice to the creativity that a lot of people have.
I was also going to say, when you were saying it, I was like, sounds fantastic, makes me anxious about but I don't know if it makes me anxious of this, like, how do you make sure that the messaging is all lined up? Like, is someone saying, I remember that always being something I was kind of worried about, like, are we all singing from like the same hymn sheet, that we understand the product so well that everything we're saying is the same? I mean, with you guys, it might be much more, your messaging might be far more along than ours were at the company I was working at, but we were always trying to work out like, how do we really say what we do? And so I'd like go through emails and look at what salespeople are saying, and I'm like, oh, they're saying, that person's saying something completely different to that person, and like, it could feel quite messy. But I guess then you really need to have like a core focus on what you do as a company, and then people can kind of riff off of that.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing is like, we're probably not getting that right. Like, we're having messaging be done by everybody, like, which means that it's not like cohesive enough, right? But the trade-off for me is like, we're getting stuff that's valuable to our customers. Sure, the messaging may not be exactly what we want it to be or how it needs to be, but, you know, every few weeks we're getting something that's interesting that has like high open rates that people are interested in. Longer term, yeah, I would love to have it be like, hey, here's exactly the type of value props we're always hitting on in these messages. Here's the types of messaging we're having. But I don't want perfection to get in the way of just like, you know, getting valuable content out there. And I think that's always going to be a trade-off at some of the early stages, is like, what's the bare minimum? How do we iterate on that? How do we just get it better over time?
For sure. You're scrappy until you're writing it. Yeah. Big communication stock. Actually, that leads me on to our next question, which is, we wanted to know from you, like, what are some of like, some great growth levers that you've seen work in your experience?
Yeah, I can't take credit for any of these because it's other people on the team who have been doing a great job of just like experimenting with stuff, right? So I think the ones that I've seen to be most interesting recently are like LinkedIn thought leadership. And so one of our co-founders, Eric, is I mean, he lived in the shoe of our customers for, you know, close to a decade, and now he's built a product that helps our customers. And so he posts on LinkedIn and he gets a bunch of, you know, great engagement. He gets a great just response and following because of it. And I think, like, you know, 5 years ago, I don't know if people were leveraging LinkedIn enough to have it drive, like, you know, top of funnel. But I think there's also a nuance in that, right? Like, it's his personal brand. It's his, like, thoughts and just, like, what he's experienced. And I don't think you hit them over the head with, like, a bunch of sales, like, come talk to me. It's a bunch of, like, hey, like, what did you find interesting? Like, how do we nurture this? Like, what's top of mind for you? And so I think the LinkedIn thing is interesting because I think it's created a bunch of different avenues for getting top of funnel in the door. And so I've encouraged a lot of people on the team to continue investing in that. And for their own personal brand, I think it's great. And I think also for just, you know, helping build top of funnel, it's a good mechanism. The other thing that, like, be amiss if we didn't talk about was, like, some version of AI in all the pieces of work that we do. I think messaging and getting, like, really good with personalized messaging using some version of AI is helpful. I still don't think it replaces, like, genuine, authentic messaging. We're using a tool called Octave, which helps kind of not only find the right people that we're looking for in terms of just, like, leads, but then helps us personalize messaging around it. And it's great. It's like helping us do this at scale. But I still want, like, the more hand-to-hand combat of our reps just reaching out to people and being like, hey, I saw this. I saw you do this. I witnessed you at this event or whatever it might be, and start to create more genuine interactions. But I think the whole AI thing is helpful. I think it's like point solutions in our processes that it's helping the most. But I by no means think it's going to replace any of the folks on my team because I think they're just so valuable in what they do.
Don't panic, anyone. Yeah. Listening. When you say messaging, I just wanted to be asked, like, more specifically, is that then, like, you're emailing? It's the sales team are emailing? Yeah.
Yeah, emailing, follow. I mean, like there's cold emails, there's, like, follow-up emails of, like, how to best do this. There's ways that you can take a bunch of these, like workshops that people have sat through in their sales careers. And it's like, here's how to write a good email, right? It's like, you can actually use frameworks for how to do things like that. And so I think what AI is doing is it's making it, you know, less of like, let me go look at a PowerPoint someone sent me decades ago that I should reference on how to write an email, but it's like making it very topical in, like, my inbox every day. And so I think it's that. I think it's also like one pagers, right? There's so many different solutions out there where you can just spit in a bunch of, like, a recording or something and be like, hey, can you help me turn this into, like, a case study or one pager, right? Like, things that I didn't think were as easy to get, you know, a couple years ago are now just easier to produce, easier to get out the door. So I think it just continues to evolve and just making us more efficient.
I think it's safe to say if there's a tool out there that does something, can all test it.
I like to play around a lot of tools.
Motto is gotta collect them all.
Yeah, exactly.
I can imagine your team in your Slack now being like, oh God, he's tried another tool.
Yeah, it's definitely that reaction. And everyone knows I'm going to play with something and they're going to have to deal with it at some point.
Just to take us on a little tangent, I saw something on LinkedIn yesterday that was actually saying, like, not how sad it is, but just that, like, that AI BDRs, like automated BDR, is actually not a great place to go, because actually the BDR role has never been more strategic, because it cut through. You have to be so, like, smart and up to speed on what's happening with your accounts. You have to add value before you take value, like all these things. And they were saying then the impact of, like, creating sales talent is also going to be a real challenge, because BDR is such a great entry point. So anyway, that's a tangent, but I think it's also a great place to experiment with messaging, is to work with your BDRs. They're the ones testing what's cutting through. So AI isn't actually great for everything. Not everything should be automated.
Totally. And I love the idea of, like, marketing using BDRs and frontline sales folks to just test, right? Like, hey, we're going after a new ICP. Like, you know, BDR come up with a list of folks that we want to reach out to. Like, we'll work together on messaging and we'll see what works and we'll iterate super fast, right? And I think that's the stuff that I find to be extremely valuable, especially, like, the handshake between marketing and BDRs, and even, like, demand gen and BDRs rolling up under marketing, because I think, like, the closer they are together, it just has such a big impact on how fast you can move into different ICPs and iterate on what works and what doesn't.
Totally. Would you want to go next, Lucy?
I feel like I should confess something while we're having this conversation, but I don't know how useful it is.
Let's hear it.
Fire away.
Never replied to a sales email in my life. I feel like I obviously must be working, but I just find it, I don't know, when we're talking about it, I'm like, God, I never respond. Like, I just, it just, the moment I feel someone's like selling me something, I'm like, no, thank you. I have this real like, so it's just interesting when you're saying it as a growth lever, I'm like, you must be emailing a lot of people. Go on.
No, I was going to say, so I have the same reaction to you. Even when I need to buy a tool and I'm on a sales call, I'm like kind of a brat because I hate being sold to. But I would say, and this is I'm going to spin it into a question for you, Kunal, is I think where it works well, or what we're trying to experiment with, is when you have intent data. Because then you're doing outreach to someone that's actually looking. I think it's quite hard to do a cold outreach email to like the 95% that's not in market, because that's going to be auto-deleted. But if you can hit the 5% in market by using smart intent data, then you actually know who's looking and can hopefully enter yourself into a sales cycle that maybe you wouldn't have been, especially if you're early stage, have low brand awareness. So maybe, Lucy, if someone emailed you and you were looking for it, you'd be like, okay, Josie, you nailed it. Like, let's chat, honey.
But I think there is this thing going on at the moment, which is like this rise of TikTok, this idea of like everybody wants to be a VIP, right? Like everybody wants to be sitting in business class on a flight. Like that's all this like, I guess like culturally, this like aspirational thing. And I think that's the same with the intent and being sold to. Like, I don't want to be searching around Google trying to find stuff. I want, if you come to me and make it this experience that feels super lightweight, that I'm not having to like convince too many people about, or you've got all the stuff that I can send to my boss and I can da-da-da. Like, I think if you're selling, you need to make like the customer's experience like the best now, because everyone's expecting this like 5-star way of working.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting that you've never replied to a sales email, but I wonder if you've replied to like a cold email where they were trying to give you value or solve a problem, which I think could be very different. Because like, imagine like, hey, you were on a podcast and someone's like, you know, I noticed in your last podcast that it was kind of blurry on one of the person's screens. You know, we have a solution that actually solves that. Like, you know, this is what it would look like. Is it worth 5 minutes to talk to me about it? Right. Like, I think there's just like, if you know enough of the pain and like what someone is trying to solve for, I think that's the difference between just blasting out a bunch of emails and being like a sniper approach of being like, I know your pain. I know what a solution looks like. And, you know, here's a quick value add. Even if you don't talk to me, like, I think you're going to find this to be valuable, that there's even something out here.
Well, I guess also as a head of marketing, you've got this huge array of like, do you need help with your SEO? And then, but then there would be stuff I'd be like, oh yeah, I do kind of need help with that. And you're right. Actually, it's the not putting it on the receiver. It's saying, I can relieve this thing for you because I know it's a problem. And then, yeah, I agree. Then I would be much more engaged with it.
Yeah.
Or maybe like if you got invited, this is where we're experimenting with events. Like if someone did a cold, this has happened to me, I get a cold outreach, like LinkedIn message being like, I'd love to, you know, invite you to a happy hour to network with some other marketing leaders. We're going to chat about, you know, this problem together. I'm like, that's cool to me. Like, I always want to meet other marketers. That's adding value for me. And then now I'm familiar with your brand. You've given something to me that maybe at the event, sure, go ahead and like give some sort of a pitch. So there's ways maybe to ease in where you are delivering that 5-star experience, Lucy, but you are also still selling because they know your pain so well. I think you just have to be so much more sophisticated now.
Yeah, I think it's a hard job. I think it's one of the hardest jobs is like, how do you get cold prospecting, you know, anything that you're doing from like just going straight cold and getting people into conversations. I think it's much harder than it's ever been because of how easy and cheap it is to send an email these days and how little like, you know, it could take to personalize that email. Like even the tools we're using, right? Like I still don't think it's a perfect fit. I think it's like, how do you add value, nurture a conversation to then eventually get them into something that makes more sense?
Yeah, totally.
And those emails are basically just a representation of like what it feels like in marketing as well, right? To like, that is that stuff around like standing out, repeating the comms the whole time, trying to prove your solution, like all of that stuff is like all part of marketing as well, of it goes in the emails, but it's also everything that we're kind of like constantly struggling with. I'm like, is the messaging right? Are we coming up with a solution? How do we get someone to want to interact with us? Like, yeah, I think it's, and that's where that this role is good, right? You're all figuring that out.
Yeah. But I think that's like such a critical piece of this, which is if, you know, sales didn't have a strong partnership with marketing, you would have a bunch of people just sending out a bunch of different things that may or may not make sense. And I think like Kelly pointed this out to me earlier this week, which is like the messaging is so important, and the faster you can like get better at that, the more impact your, you know, demand gen function, your prospecting function, all those things will just get inherently better. It feels like you're just like leveling up the entire company by having your messaging right. Because everything else will be a little bit easier because of that.
I totally agree.
Taking things in a little bit of a different direction to results. What results are you measured on, or do you care the most about as a CRO?
Revenue is definitely one. That's like the easy answer. The one, like, it's so hard to just be like, hey, did we hit a number at the end of the month or quarter or year? Or did we not, right? There's so much that goes into that. And so across all parts of the team, I have metrics for individuals in terms of like what I want to see on a weekly basis. Are we getting into new business conversations? Are we big? Is our pipeline getting big enough? Like, who's responsible for different parts of the pipeline? And then even from like a customer's perspective, you know, how many touch points do we have with customers? What's product adoption look like? Because I think that's like a shared responsibility between, you know, success and product, and, you know, it all kind of rolls up under, are we giving enough value? For the ones between like marketing and sales, I think the biggest ones that I look at are pipeline, because we know that we just need, you know, more people in the door. I've looked at things like website visitors and conversions from like website to, you know, call to actions, whether that's like a demo or a trial, how many people go through trials, like what's our conversion rates from trial to, you know, a sales conversation, trial to paid. I just think that like we could get in the weeds so quickly that what I look for also is I want someone on marketing to tell me like, hey, here's what I think is most important. Right. And here's how it levels up to like the revenue goal that we have or the pipeline goal that we have. But I think, yeah, I try to strike the balance between being too in the weeds of every metric, because I don't know how useful that is when you can't change the outcome of some of these metrics right off the bat, versus knowing that like, hey, our top line goals are going to be, you know, a pipeline number, a revenue number, and everyone's going to contribute to that in some meaningful way. And it's like, how is that, you know, function or person contributing, and what are they doing on a week to week basis in order to support that? So that's a little bit of like just the metrics that I think about and care about from a team perspective.
And we've covered this actually in a previous episode, but I think also it used to, the revenue thing used to truly give me the heebie-jeebies of like, oh my God, this is like, how am I head of marketing anywhere responsible to money? So stressful. I should be spending it, not worried about revenue.
Actually, money.
But actually, when I started to really break it down, where I saw the key kind of the sweet spot for marketing to understand with revenue is, okay, if you're based on revenue, it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be bringing in as many leads as possible. It actually means that you can have more focus around what your goals are. So it might be that you're only bringing in, you know, 3,000 page views per month in terms of on your website, and you might be only converting like 50 leads. But if those leads are converting at a high rate or at a rate that is like higher revenue than a customer that might come in and not spend that much, they were really the things that then I found less scary. And I think when you're saying around the conversions on the website, I was always trying to look at like, what are the customers we're bringing in, and what are the levers that we're having that are bringing in the types of customers we see most beneficial for revenue, and then how do we dial that up? So that was kind of always where I started. I think that then felt less like, where's the revenue bringing customers that are bringing money, and actually more like, let's try and figure out this kind of sweet spot, and then how can we keep pushing and growing that?
Yeah. And it needs to speak to each person on the team. Like if someone's looking at a goal and they're just like, I have no impact over it, motivation, all these things like are thrown out the window. Right. And so I think there's like, and I think this is across a company, right? You have company goals and like, you know, revenue is potentially one of it, but how do you get, you know, product, eng, design to buy into other aspects of what's important to the company? and make it speak to them. And that's no different across like sales, marketing, success, and the rest of the org.
You can also look at some leading indicators. Like that's something we've tried to do with pipeline, because you can say, we have a pipeline problem. Let's try a million things, but it takes a while for any activity to actually have an impact on pipeline. And so it's finding as well, what are some of those like micro milestones that might give you an indication? And that's also motivating for people along the way as well.
Yeah. I think it's also like having conviction and making some bets, right? Like I think like influencer marketing has become such a big thing too. And it's what a lot of B2B SaaS companies are trying. It's like, you know, you would never have thought a few years ago that influencer marketing would be like a B2B marketing tactic, but it is. And it's like, the advice I keep getting on that is that you can try it once or twice, you may not get the results, and then you may give up on it. But like, if you invest in it and you stick with it and you like continue to just say like, hey, we're going to do this, we're going to crack the nut on it. Like, yeah, it may not give you the outcome metric that your CRO cares about, but like, there may be something there a little bit longer term, and it's making those bets, having conviction around it, and then eventually being able to say like, hey, we tried this long enough that we know it's not our thing. We can move on. But I think it's also like in my seat, I always am potentially quick to just be like, yeah, that didn't work. Let's move on. And I think it's having that thought partner from the marketing standpoint to be like, hey, this is a bet we are going to invest in over the next 6 to 12 months. Like, let's not look at the short term. Let's look at the long term.
I was literally thinking about my data thing of like,
me too.
I used to have Instagram on there. I was really proud of my Instagram followers. Like, where is that going to fit if I've got a CRO managing me? But that's at, yeah, that, I think that wider, more traditional sometimes senses of like data within marketing and how you're growing social or looking at brand and all of those kind of, or like brand activity specifically, like where that fits within this role definitely feels like, yeah, it's kind of the thing within the marketing role, if you're managed by a CRO, is the thing that is like specific to marketing, is how you explain that and get your team on board on those things. But Kelly, sorry, you said you were going to say something.
No, I was going to say, I was just thinking the exact same thing. And I think it's, to your point, Kunal, like to be an effective marketing leader, it's maybe there is always a bit of education, depending on who your CRO is, of yes, there are short-term things that we need to do to drive X impact, but there's also long-term things. And those actually aren't always going to be measurable. But we know that, you know, we need to run an org where we're not so obsessed with attribution that we prevent ourselves from experimenting with anything or from doing things that are impactful, but we can't measure them, like an influencer program. And so I think it's being able to come in confident with that, and depending who you are working with or for on the sales side, is make sure you advocate for that, because you know the long-term impacts, for example, of not investing in brand.
Yeah. And it's like picking a CRO that is going to value that and not just like, I would 100% value that. And I would appreciate someone coming in and being like, hey, like, I know you care about this short-term metric, but I'm not going to care about that right now. And here's why. And, you know, tell me I'm wrong. And I appreciate that. Sorry, Lucy, what were you going to say?
No, well, I was talking over you. Sorry. What I was going to say, Kelly, I just keep saying me and Kelly have talked about this before, but in a way, we were trying to work out, actually, you kind of have to look in marketing as your role as like a percentage. And like, it might be that, yeah, if you're reporting into a CRO, that 60, 70% is short-term metrics, what's looking like in terms of revenue, go to market, da, da, da. But also like then being able to have that conversation to say, I know that that's a priority and something that you're reporting and it's important to you, but we need to be doing also this 40%. So like, this is how I'm going to break up the activities we're doing and how I'll prioritize. I think, yeah, making sure that you're still keeping that kind of more traditional marketing stuff alive is where you can really then like be lent on as a head of marketing.
Yeah, 100%. The stuff still needs to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Kunal, is there anything we haven't asked you that you think is important to talk about?
No, I mean, I love this forum, because I think you're right that there's like this bigger handshake happening between sales, marketing, success, that is like more prominent than ever before. I think what I would love to hear from both of you is, what do you look for in a CRO, and what's most important as you think about like evolving your role, like being successful, and you know, what do you aspire to get from a CRO? Because they're not going to have the skill sets of like teaching you what to do. And so like, what exposure do you want from them, and what can they help, you know, continue to educate you on?
Damn, that's a really good question.
Lucy, I'm genuinely curious for myself because it's very top of mind as we bring on Adam Marketing. Like, yeah. I continue to wonder, like, how am I going to help this person?
But I think you already touched on it, which is like having an open mind to the. There's nothing worse than being in a situation where you constantly feel you have to fight for marketing. I think that is like, it makes you feel really like anxious and it doesn't really get the best out of people. I think it's having an open mind to understanding that that person is an expert in what they're doing. I think if you're hiring a head of marketing, they should feel pretty confident around things that they know are working or can work for your company. So I think it's having an open mind, and I think it's having patience with the things they want to try. If that's the 40% of what they're doing, is like having the patience to do that. And like you say, knowing when to maybe suggest you quit, but it not be you've done it twice. But also like getting that patience from above you to for that pressure to not feel really intense would be the two things I think I'd look for most. But Kelly, what about you?
Yeah, I like that. I'm thinking with my like first time head of marketing hat, or maybe if you're, you know, someone that's relatively new to leadership, is maybe giving them space to like learn, like in the sense of going to marketing networking events, or if there's an area they feel that they have a weakness in or need a bit of help in, it's offering to pay for like an external mentorship coach. Like I think I would imagine this is a whole other podcast that actually being a CRO is quite lonely. And I think being a head of marketing can also be a quite lonely role because you're reporting to someone. You're finally at the stage in your career where you're reporting to someone that isn't an expert in your domain. You're the expert. And so I think helping that person to build that sort of external marketing board of directors, to get training that they need to, for example, my company's flying me to an offsite that RBC is having in Austin, like what an investment. And so I think maybe that's, it's almost external help, helping them find that and acknowledging that sometimes they won't have all the answers.
Yeah, that's spot on. I like that. I think it's just like continuing to have them have the outlets and the resources to invest in themselves, knowing that like, I know I don't know enough about marketing. I'm not gonna be able to help, you know, someone who's leading marketing do their job better. It's like, it's a partnership and it's someone who I want to like partner with. It's not someone who is looking for, you know, coaching from me. And so I think it's recognizing that for me is going to be the biggest thing.
Yeah. And I think like, you're quite good at this, but like just asking good questions, like, and you're not asking questions in a challenging way. It's just like, oh, what about this? Or sometimes I think from my perspective, I just want a brainstorming partner to think about things. Like, I have an idea. What do you think? And let's kind of like, is it spar on it together?
Sparring partner. That's my favorite term. Yeah. Exactly.
And also one that you can say, I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
I think like similar, like with what Kelly's saying about going out and externally, like finding people that could support you. I think as a head of marketing, you kind of feel you need to be able to do it all. Otherwise you're somehow failing. So yeah, having a safe place where you can say, oh, never done that before. Worth a go. Happy to do it. Let's find how we can like get to that point where I feel confident, but you kind of feel like, yeah, you're going to get caught out at some point because somebody's going to say, right, can you do this huge SEO project for me? And you're like, I've never done that before.
No, but I know someone who can.
Yeah, exactly. They've actually emailed me.
Yeah, they've emailed you.
They invited me to a free dinner.
Well, you know, this is really rounded off that so well.
This has been awesome. Thank you so much for being our first guest. I've had a blast. I've learned a ton. Lucy, anything else to add?
No, I can only say thank you. It's been great. I've really loved chatting to you. Thank you so much.
This is so great. Thanks for having me. You both are crushing, and I really appreciate what you're putting out there. It's awesome.
Thanks, Kunal. Talk to you soon.
All right. Cheers, guys.